Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Hello, everyone. This is Gretchen Hochmeister, the Executive Director of the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon, and I'm joined by Tammy Gaskill from Rojan Library in New York. And we are here today to talk about banned books, I believe. So I thought I would just start out by listing some statistics. I did a little research on numbers to really show what's happening in the country. I think we can agree that, gratefully, not as much is happening in our corner of the world, although there are have been some challenges nearby. But in other parts of the country, it's really quite severe. And in 2019, according to some statistics I just found in Publishers Weekly, 377 unique titles were targeted for censorship in a combination of school and public libraries across the United States. And in 2023, an unbelievable 4,240 unique titles were challenged. And 47% of those titles represented characters or viewpoints of LGBTQ plus and BIPOC individuals. So it's really staggering and frightening. And I think given the election results last week, we have more to fear in this area because so many of these challenges are politically motivated. I think most of them are. I think in the past it used to be, you know, a parent might speak to the school librarian because they disagreed with something in a book that their child had access to. And now it's not individuals, it's large organizations that are organized making these challenges. And I think it's also important to note the difference between a challenged book and a banned book. A challenged book is something that somebody has raised questions about and would like it to be reconsidered, and there's probably a reconsideration procedure going on the library staff side, but it still remains on the shelves. A banned book is actually removed from the shelves. Have you had any challenges over at Rojan, Tammy?
No, not any formal challenges. There have been a few people questioning books, but then after a conversation, no formal challenge has been presented. But just to follow up on your statistics a little bit, I also looked to see what was happening. And we know 2023 was an especially bad year. We don't really know the numbers for 2024 yet. Mm-hmm. But from 2022 to 2023, there was even a 65% jump. So
yeah,
it's really been quite, a recent phenomenon. And it started really with school libraries. But last year in 2023, there was a huge jump in the number of challenges at public libraries, a 92% increase in titles being targeted at public libraries. And I agree with you. 2024, I think, has been a bit better than 2023. But with the current political climate, I think, we do need to be vigilant and prepared.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The statistics are really staggering. And I think people might feel more emboldened to speak up and challenge things who maybe were a little reluctant. And I think also the influence of social media and the speed at which news or fake news, information, whether it's accurate or not, the speed at which that spreads now. Also, people get ideas and things happen very quickly as well.
But, and as you mentioned, a lot of what we read about is happening in other parts of the country, but we're not immune here.
Absolutely.
In New York last year, according to the ALA, the American Library Association, there were 79 book challenges to individual titles. It is here, too. And I think we should also note that it's not only challenges to books, but also to programs.
Absolutely.
And that's maybe where we've seen more activity locally is in response to some programs.
Absolutely. We should let our listeners know that librarians are professionals, right? They need to remember that. And we have policies and we have committees and groups that meet to set these policies. Our boards approve these policies, and we are have policies in place for when these things happen. In our library, for example, We have a collection development policy, which I'm sure you have as well, and that is a policy that details how the staff of this library, who's responsible for purchasing books for the collection or any media for the collection, what criteria they use for purchasing materials and adding to the collection. And we also have a very solid reconsideration process. So if somebody were to come in and say, and this applies also to programs, I'm glad you pointed that out, our policy, you know, if they are offended or object to a program or something in the collection, we listen to them. We have a form to fill out. Of course, you can only lodge a formal complaint if you actually have an address in our town. We should note that as well. You can't go and challenge books in other places where you don't live. And we then have a process to go through to, you know, listen to the person's concerns. And I should also say, in the state of Connecticut, in the last couple of years, the State Library of Connecticut, which supports all of us in many ways, has made it mandatory to have a approved collection development policy that you revisit every 3 to 5 years. And we need to send that to the state in order to be eligible for grants and funding from the state. And that's a new thing they've put in place, because there were, I assume there must have been some libraries that didn't have it and they wanted to get them, to be strong in the event of any challenges.
And yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, New York does not have such a requirement yet, but there is currently legislation pending that is supported by the New York Library Association that would require every library to have a collection development policy that, you know, requires them to have a collection or develop a collection that reflects the interests of all the people in their community and protects them from such, helps them in the case of such challenges.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you also uphold the ALA Freedom to Read statement and the Library Bill of Rights, which is another important document and set of standards put forth by the ALA, you know, I think 100 years ago. It's been around a long time,
it's
the Library
long,
Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
Long, long time. And our board, you know, reaffirms that periodically when we review policies. And we, that is also part of our collection development policy for people to see. And we, of course, strive to have a collection that represents a vast, the whole spectrum of interests and beliefs as much as we can in a small library. You know, given our space, we try to have things appealing to everyone. You know, there's a saying I'm sure you've seen. There's a library in Connecticut that frequently puts it on their sign outside, and it says, "In this library, there is something to offend everyone." I think that's a good thing to remember, right? There are things that we all like and things that, you know, things I wouldn't read, things that I'm not interested in, but there might be somebody else who's interested in that or who needs that specifically in their life at that time. And that's why it's important to uphold the freedom to read. And I think another thing to remember is that we are not daycare centers, right? You're not supposed to drop your kid off here. We have a policy that under the age of 12, children can't be unattended in the library. And it's really the parent and caregiver's responsibility. If there's something those people don't want the children to be exposed to, they need to be helping them, guiding them, making their selections for things.
Yeah, and that's very explicit in our policy. We have what we call a collection management policy, right? Because it addresses the whole life cycle of the collection, including the removal of materials or weeding, as we call it.
Yes, absolutely.
But we specifically say it is the responsibility of parents or legal guardians, not librarians, to to determine what's appropriate for their children. And
absolutely.
What's appropriate for one person's child may not be appropriate for another.
Sure. And we don't, shelve the young adult books in the children's section next to the picture books,
right.
You know. They're in a different section of the library, so they wouldn't be available to them necessarily. So, they wouldn't be near them. So there's much that we do to make sure that things are appropriately displayed and accessible to the appropriate age group. It's a scary time.
To go back to, I mentioned weeding or removing items from the collection. I mean, so we have, as you do, it sounds like a request for reevaluation or reconsideration procedure and form that people need to fill out. In our case, the reasons they can select are limited as to why to have, they mm-hmm. would like something to be reconsidered. One of its, if it's improperly cataloged, so say we did have an adult book in the children's section, that would be grounds for reconsideration.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another is it doesn't meet our selection criteria, and we tell them what that is, and if they feel it doesn't meet that, then we'll reconsider it. And the other is if it does not fall within the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So that sort of means it can't be just because a single person objects to a single passage mm-hmm. in a book,
mm-hmm. right?
Which is often the case in these challenges.
Yes.
It's often the book is not evaluated as a whole. It's a specific passage or illustration that
yes.
People find
yep.
offensive
off.
And don't
Absolutely.
Evaluate the work in context.
Right, and I think oftentimes
the
people...
Of the community, yeah.
Sure. Excuse me. I was just going to say that oftentimes I believe that the people challenging these books haven't even read them from cover to cover.
They don't know that.
Yeah, they don't take it in context. That's absolutely true. We've had a library located less than half an hour from us here to the east in Connecticut that did go through a whole challenge process last year. They are a municipal library. It was a very ugly situation. A lot of their staff left. And I believe the book has been, returned to the shelves, but it is in a place that no one can really get to from what I've heard, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there. It's in the building, mm-hmm. but you're not just going to come upon it. So these things do happen close to home. And I've also read, and this is particularly disturbing, specifically for municipal libraries, that these politically motivated sort of campaigns are often being used not because people really are concerned about the contents of books, or it's just a way to people somehow imagine we can just close the library if we make a big enough ruckus and we'll save money and we'll have money to do something else with, you know, that it's actually a sort of a script that some people are following. Let's just go challenge these things and make it miserable for the library, and then we won't have to fund them, which is really terrifying. So, and I thought we might want to mention what people can do, you know, to fight against this. There are organizations you can support, people you can follow on social media, organizations, the Freedom to Read campaign. You can help the library with activities for the month, and I believe it's October, right? We just had it. And some people call it Banned Books Month.
Banned
some
books
people call
month.
It Freedom to Read,
yeah.
Freedom
right.
to Read Month. It depends which way you want to spin it, right? But it does the same thing. And we put out a big display, and it was really interesting. We had it in a very prominent location, and a lot of people stopped and said, I can't believe this is banned. And we had a staff member who, for each book that we displayed, she put into the book a piece of paper that explained why people objected to it. And it was
yeah.
very interesting to see. You know, people are
yeah,
astounded.
Yeah, we have an interesting display that we've done. We have a number of books that are, there's a wrapped in brown paper, and on the mm-hmm. Brown paper is written the reason this book was
That's
challenged.
That's great. Yep.
And then there's a sort of a key, so people are supposed to guess what the book is. And then
oh, that's great.
So that, and they're often surprised to find what title
that's a great
has been
idea.
Challenged.
Yeah, that's very effective.
Yeah.
Very effective. And,
we do have
you know.
Patrons who, so in the spring, we have a fundraising campaign called around National Library Week, which is in April.
Yeah.
And people who give a certain amount of money are allowed to request that we purchase a book of a certain genre to put in the library. Not
oh,
a specific
great.
Title, although sometimes they do.
Yeah.
But last couple of years, it's interesting, we've had a number of people who, rather than telling us a genre, they'll say any book that has been banned in Florida or something
That's
of that
great.
Sort.
Yeah.
They're supporting yeah. Us having that diverse literature in our collection.
That's fabulous.
In that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a great group called Florida Freedom to Read that I know is an organization people can support to help with what's happening there. There's a memoir that was just published by Amanda Jones. She's the school librarian in Louisiana, who actually spoke out at a meeting about, she teaches in the same town where she lives, so she went to a meeting where people were challenging books in the public library and spoke out, and in the couple of years since then, have had death threats against her family, very, very unpleasant situation, and she's become an outspoken, you know, representative of librarians and, you know, for advocating for the freedom to read what you want to have and to have access for people to all kinds of books. And she just wrote a book called That Librarian, and it's right. Quite good. I've been reading it. Our most requested book right now is Louise Penny's The Great Wolf. We have three copies, and they're all out right now. And we've had some requests the last few days for Samantha Harvey's Orbital, the book which just won the Booker Prize.
The Booker.
What are people reading at your place?
So Louise Penny's The Great Wolf is also quite popular now. Still, Liz Moore's The God of the Woods is topping the list of most popular books, along with Sally Rooney's Intermezzo, her latest book on a couple of Irish brothers who struggle with the death of their father. So, and what are you reading yourself, Gretchen?
I just finished a book called Time Shelter, a Bulgarian novel that's very Kafkaesque, written by a guy named Georgi Gospodinov, or Gospodinov, and it was an international bestseller, but not well-known here, and it's sort of a really interesting look at Eastern European political sort of climate. Very interesting book. Very interesting. A little unsettling to read in the midst of the election. I will say that.
Yeah.
What about you?
So a little more in the popular literature vein. I just finished reading Kristen Hannah's The Women, which was probably our most popular book a little while ago. But
And
it's about the nurses who served in Vietnam, both in the war and after they returned home, and how invisible they were and the struggles they faced. And I enjoyed the book, and I found it kind of reassuring in a way in this time, in that it reminds me that this country has been through some very divisive times before, and we've managed to come through them. So I'm hoping for that in the current climate, too.
That's a good reminder. That's great. In terms of events, we have a new backgammon club that's beginning today, every Thursday from 1 to 3. What about you? What's happening over at Rojan?
Quite a few things. I'd highlight just a few of the highlights. Next weekend, Saturday the 23rd, we have a family concert with John and Anne-Marie Farrell called Season of Light and Hope, which is a concert with songs that are to promote peace and understanding, and songs of the season that emphasize gratitude and humor and respect, which seems very timely. As well as then after Thanksgiving, we're having a marionette performance, a family show of The Last Dragon, which is a retelling of the fairy tale by Inesbitt, and it too has themes of self-esteem, friendship, discrimination, stereotypes. So those seem like very timely programs to me.
Oh, that's great. Sounds like there's a lot going on. I know there is. So as the weather gets cooler, if people want to come inside, we're a good place to go. And I hope everyone will support their libraries by getting library cards and taking out all kinds of books. Thanks, Tammy.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.